Shopping for a new mattress? The Helix lineup offers 20 unique mattresses, including their award-winning Luxe and Ultra Premium Elite collections, Helix Plus, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, and the Helix Kids mattress, designed for growing bodies and endorsed by child sleep experts. So how will you know which Helix mattress works best for you and your body? Take the Helix Sleep Quiz and find your perfect mattress in under 2 minutes. Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping on it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress. Not only will the mattress be the best you have slept on, but the setup is fast and easy. Helix mattresses are delivered in a box and straight to your door for free. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/drink. That's helixsleep.com/drink. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now. If you're anything like me, you are always trying to learn something new, and that is why I love Rosetta Stone so much. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program. It's available on desktop or can be used as an app on your phone or tablet. Rosetta Stone immerses you in many ways with its intuitive process. You can pick up any language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Blaise has been learning German with Rosetta Stone and is so cool to watch because as someone who speaks German, I get to see how he learns the different pronunciations, how excited he gets when he gets something right, and the phrases that he's learning we're going to be able to use next time we visit Germany and Austria. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, and that's why We Drink listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/drink. That's rosettastone.com/drink.
Oh, Christine.
What?
I just know that I have to listen to a part two of that horrible story.
I was wondering
story.
If you remembered or not.
Who could forget?
I don't know.
Maybe everyone else who's gotten a week to not think about it, but yeah. Certainly me who recorded the other half yesterday with you.
Yeah.
Two days of waking up to some gruesome stuff.
It's tough stuff.
Before we get into it, though, I would like to banter with you a little bit.
Excellent. What would you like to banter about?
I don't know. My story is incredibly short this week, and so I feel like we have some wiggle room to catch up on things or, you know, say hi,
I know I suppose. You know this, but that is a dangerous kind of path to go down of, like, we have so much time on our hands because...
I was lying all the time.
Anyone can use it up real quick.
The whole time I did not mean it. Okay, well, let's just do a good old-fashioned... How are you and what do you drink?
Yeah, great question. I was about to ask you. I drink because I exercised today.
Whoa. Wait, do you drink for a good reason or a bad reason?
Bad. Bad. Always bad.
What was your exercise routine? What did you do?
So I am not a person who, like, I was at one point in my life someone who was, like, obsessively exercising. But I'm not good at being a casual exerciser because... Mm-hmm. I take everything a little too far, and so as people who've struggled with this know, it can be a slippery slope. So I've become very obsessive, and so I kind of cut back for a while, and then obviously with the baby and everything, but I was like, oh, I want to, like, be more active, you know, in, like, not a intense way, but just, like, be more active. And so I found this group, and I went out of my comfort zone, and I did this, like, mom's fitness group thing today.
Whoa.
I know. Hang on. I signed up before I could talk myself out of it. And I was like, why did I do that? And then you take the baby with you. So I took Leona and she met some other babies. And
were you part of, like, the stroller squad? Is that what happened?
It's literally called that, I think. Like, it's something it's something really funny and cheesy. And I remember being like, oh my God, my brother's gonna make fun of me. And I told him, he's like, no, I'm so proud of you. And I was like, that was nice.
I'll make fun of you. That was silly. But yeah. I can't believe you went out of your social... I feel like you bragged about the wrong thing. You stepped out of your social comfort zone, and that is much bigger than exercising. That's exercising your brain and your will.
It was fun because, like, everybody had... If they did have their kids with them, it was, like, super... I mean, everybody, like, gets it. So if the baby is fussy or is hungry, like, you just stop and, like, you know. But Leona had a great time. She was blabbing the whole time. And it was just really low-key and very, very, like, easy, basic, simple, just, like, you know, shoulder.
Did you make a buddy?
They did, like, a bomb pops and water guns afterward. And I had to go home because...
Leona was too tired and we had to record. So I feel like next time I'll have to stay in early. So, but yeah, people, everyone was really nice and I think I might try it again. So
I took you away from water guns. That's so sad.
God, I knew you felt it somewhere in your soul that you were.
I felt that one. That one hurt.
But Leona had her first popsicle and it was a disastrous mess, but it was very fun.
I can't imagine a baby or the popsicles ever been a clean affair.
No. And she likes to hold everything in her hands, so it just went everywhere.
Especially with her tight little baby fists. So yes, I can just see it like seeping through her fingers like she's like it's bleeding.
Yeah, exactly. It was
like it was prey.
It was of course grape flavor, so it was a disaster.
But, it stained everything, I'm sure.
Everything, yeah.
My clothes.
Poor Blaze's car. But you know, we had fun. But yeah, so I felt like I was doing something totally way out of my comfort zone, both physically and socially. So I had an interesting day and I think I'm gonna be sore tomorrow, even though I was just like walking the whole time, but I'm very out of shape. So what about you, Em?
Well, first of all, I feel like an asshole because I've already yawned like 8 times and like you sound like you've had an exhausting
day. Drinking a
day.
Cold brew, so I am wired.
Oh, okay. Cool. I haven't had anything yet. I'm still chewing on sleep a little bit. So
mm-hmm.
What about me? Oh, I don't know. I had a dentist appointment yesterday, which I was nervous about, and I'm still nervous about after the fact because I was told it was a cavity, but it was so close to a nerve that they were saying if it didn't go well, you'd need a root canal. And after I left the dentist yesterday, it still didn't feel right. Something doesn't feel right. And I'm like so scared that it's like not going to get better and that I'm going to need a root canal. So it doesn't like I'm not in pain, but I'm just aware my tooth feels
so
different.
They drilled the cavity yesterday and you just have to wait and see if it like did the trick.
I guess so. It should honestly like I've had cavities filled before. It should like be completely like totally fine now. And it isn't. And so now I'm scared.
But they filled it yesterday.
They filled it yesterday okay, and okay. it still feels a little sensitive. Whatever the filling is, it feels a little soft. Mm. It doesn't feel like it's like. Or I feel like if I bit down on like an apple the wrong way or something, it would crack and I'm scared.
How far, where is it in your mouth? Like your molar?
It's one of the good ones. It's one of the super solid ones that chewers. I need. Yeah. It's one of the yang 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 ones.
Too bad.
I know. If it were like a little one, I'd say just rip it out.
Oh, okay.
I'm that drastic about it. But this is one like I really need to perform well at all times. So,
As a carnivore. Yeah,
as someone who
I guess herbivores use these guys. I learned from the dinosaur exhibit.
Oh, well,
carnivores
use
the canine sharp ones.
Oh, okay. Well, apparently I'm an herbivore because I need my crunchers. I need my.
You got to grind it, you know.
Yeah, so I'm a little worried about that, but luckily my dentist is like ridiculously close by. So if there's an emergency, I'm sure I can just
stumble on in,
hustle down there and be like, please, God, help me. But yeah, I really, it's, maybe it's a mental game. I think it's probably fine. And I've just twisted it in my own head. So, but that's the bad reason why I drink. The good reason why I drink, or the progressively less stressful reason why I drink, is because I think, fingers crossed, by the time you're here, the troll hole should be complete.
By the time I'm there. Oh my gosh, how exciting.
I know. If it is, you will know about it. But if it's not, you will also know about it. But I'm trying to hustle. I really want it to be done by the time you're here.
Well, I'm expecting an Evite because, as you know, I'm...
Christine, you fucking ruined it. That's what I meant by you'll know if it's ready.
Oh. Well, I'm the one who started the Evite train, so...
I know, but I wanted to return the favor, and if it's ready, you will be getting Evite.
You have no idea how happy that makes me. Even okay. If it's not ready, then next time I want an Evite.
You'll still get an Evite. It'll just be a date much further in the future.
Oh, yeah. Or it'll just be like, don't come by. You're not
RSVP
invited to the troll hole.
In 2023. You let me know. But so there's like one super big thing left that I have to get done for it. And then after that, I'm like 95% done. I think the rest of it is just kind of finagling.
That's exciting.
I'm very excited.
I
hope
wait.
You enjoy
We're
it.
We're going to have to do like a Patreon reveal or something.
Oh, there will be a tour. Definitely. Oh, I've excellent. Put too much blood, sweat, and tears into this. So.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
I've tried very hard to be very functional and practical with my space. So every little bit of it has been used.
Wow, Em, I'm so excited.
I'm very proud of myself. There have been a few times where I just stood there in the middle of the room and I went, I patted my own back physically, and then I went, I'm so proud of myself. I believe in self-care, and that was something I needed to do. So, but it's healing something in my childhood for some reason. I think it's like the room full of things I always wanted but was always told no. You know what I mean?
Oh, I should make one of those. That would be chaotic.
It's a blast. Yeah. It's very fun. So it is chaotic also. So it's just very fun. It's like a museum of all my hopes and dreams, I guess.
Oh.
Let's do what you want with that. It's like I don't know what the right word is. But you know how like there's like crazy words like phantasmagorium or something?
Oh dear Lord.
It has a gorium at the end. Emporium, maybe. An emporium.
It's an E.
There it is.
It's a troll hall emporium.
Yeah, it's a good time. That's what it is.
I can't wait to see it.
You're going to have a blast. So I don't know. You better not be knocking it at all, or you are not invited into the troll hole.
You better not what?
You better not knock it at all.
Why would I knock it?
I don't know. Whatever you see in there, you cannot judge. You just got to know that it's part of the ride. That's all.
What, you think I'm going to be mad you didn't nail the curtains to the wall like I do? I mean, I feel like I don't have a leg to stand on here, but
you kind of do, because every time you nail something to the wall, it does work.
Thank you very much for finally admitting that. I appreciate it.
I don't like it, but I also can't fight at you. Like, you're right.
Factually speaking.
Okay. Well, anyway, those are my updates. Do you have any good, bad situations, or are you just, is today just a day all about being proud of yourself?
Just vibing, you know?
You're a social butterfly.
Oh my gosh. I was like so nervous because I'm not used to being social with people. But it was fun. It was fun. It was very chill. And it wasn't chill because it was 96 degrees out. So that part was not fun. But
and humid, I bet.
Very sticky.
Disgusto. But
that's what the popsicles were for, I guess.
Alexa, what's the weather today?
75, no okay, humidity.
All right.
Alexa, stop.
She always wants to tell you more than you
give
a shit
about.
Call
me in October and then we can talk about the weather. Okay.
Okay, that's fair. You actually have like a fun, cool October.
I get like
every
thunderstorms and like leaves. I know. So listen, I wasn't even going to bring it up.
I brought it up. It's my own fault. Anyway, I just wanted to have a little chat with you. I just wanted to say hi. I believe it or not, I enjoy our friendship. So,
it is hard to believe at times, but it goes both ways, my friend.
Cool. Well, I guess I've got my story to tell, but it is shockingly short.
Listen, that's fine. Nobody's going to complain. Mine is long and depressing, so...
I know, but then I felt like an obligation to like really deliver this time, and so like to fight off how like sad your story is.
No, because that'll just delay the inevitable, you know?
You're right.
Just get it over with.
You're right. Okay, well... Okay, well, if anyone was looking for a road trip episode, it is not this one, I don't think. But
stop the car.
If you're looking for something to, like, you know, brush your teeth to, that's what this is, so get ready.
Don't brush your teeth that long. I feel like no wonder Em has cavities. I feel like your enamel's all going to wear off.
Okay, well, do something that takes approximately 10 minutes of your time.
So you got engaged. Congrats. Now you may be wondering what's next. If you're planning a wedding, the first thing you need to know about is Zola. In fact, I actually shout this at any friends I have who are engaged because it saved my life when I was planning my wedding. Zola has everything you need to plan your wedding in one place, including venue options and all your vendors. Plus, you can design save the dates and invites, build a free wedding website, create your registry, and stay on track and on budget throughout the entire process with their free planning tools. I tell my friends Zola is a one-stop shop, right? This is the key to planning a wedding. I didn't even have a wedding planner. I used Zola and they were so, so helpful on every front. Everything from save the dates to a wedding website to online RSVPs to finding vendors. With Zola, you can plan your entire wedding in one convenient place. From the day you get engaged and search for the venue to the day you send out your save the dates, make your registry, and even taste your cake, Zola has literally everything you need to make the whole process super easy and actually enjoyable. There's even a 5-star app that helps you plan on the go or on your couch. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com. You've probably heard about Burrow. It's a new kind of furniture company known for timeless design, durable materials, and details that make life in your space easier. Last year, they brought their expertise outside with the launch of their outdoor line, and now they're adding more must-have pieces to the collection. Dunes offers seating, dining, and lounger options, while Scout is a new folding chair upholstered in a chic woven fabric. Made of durable materials made for all seasons, weather-resistant teak, stainless alloy, quick-dry, stain-resistant cushions, love that, with easy assembly and disassembly. They also just launched a new standing desk co-pilot with adjustable height, a durable scratch-resistant body with built-in storage to make working at home easier than ever. And of course, there's Burrow's legacy seating collections like the Nomad and Range, now available in new colors. So no matter what you choose, you always get free shipping on every order, which can run up to $100 for larger items, and that is a win. You know Emma and I love our Burrow, and now that they have outdoor furniture, I'm very excited to get my lounge on. We have this balcony, and I am always looking for something to make it comfy but also look chic, you know, because it's outside, everyone can see it, and I want to look stylish while I'm bird watching. I love Burrow. It's easy to assemble. It ships free. I can't recommend them highly enough. And that's why We Drink listeners can get 15% off their first order at burrow.com/drink. That's Burrow, burrow.com/drink for 15% off. burrow.com/drink.
So shout out, because as soon as I say this, you're going to know what I'm covering. But shout out to a podcast we were recently on called That's Spooky for teaching us about this.
Oh, I'm excited.
It was a fun time. It was a fun time to be on that show. And they were a blast. Very lovely. And so while we were talking, at some point, cryptids came up. Or I don't know. I truly don't know how it came up. All I know is we landed there, which is that I was taught about the Tizzy Wizzy.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you how. They have a pet hedgehog, and they said the hedgehog's Halloween costume is going to be the Tizzy Wizzy. And we said, I'm sorry, what?
Yes,
and they were like,
that is,
you don't know about the Tizzy Wizzy? And we were like, we're embarrassed. We didn't know this.
I was embarrassed, definitely. Yeah. So shout out to That Spooky. They were very, 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 very sweet.
Gracious hosts.
And even if you don't listen to them, maybe around Halloween, check out their Instagram, because maybe you'll see a picture of their hedgehog dressed as the Tizzy Wizzy. Mm-hmm. So this is in Lake Windermere, which is in Lake District. I guess it's called like the Lake District, and there's a bunch of lakes in Cumbria, England.
Okay.
Sure.
I thought we were doing like a Minnesota lakes thing, and then we went somewhere completely different.
It felt very Minnesotan. So.
Like Lake District. Yeah, you had me going, but so now I'm just kind of along for the ride.
Okay, well, good. Whew. So in Cumbria, England, there's an area called Lake District, and it's a bunch of lakes. And the one lake we're talking about today is Lake Windermere. And this was either in 1900 or around the early 1900s, but I think it was 1900.
Okay.
There's a boatman.
What?
A man who owns a boat.
Oh.
And he notices that tourism is just booming in the Lake District. So he decided to try to make some money off of it. He was like, how can I profit from this situation? He's a hustler, I guess. He's like ready to scheme. And so he goes to what I thought was a pub in one source, but then in another source, it's called Stag's Head Hotel. Oh. So I don't know if it's like a pub in the hotel.
Yeah. Maybe it's one of those old timey inns.
Mm, I love an inn.
Love a good inn.
And so he goes and has himself a little drink while he's trying to scheme and plot out his next strategy. And he's going to... here's the thing. He has some ideas at first that don't land.
I don't care about anything else. I want to know about the failed ideas. This is fun.
I only saw this in one source, and I was like, I don't know if this is just flowery writing and maybe none of this is true, but someone
it
wanted
doesn't
to add
matter.
More.
I want to
but
know.
Since it's in a source, I will be saying it as if it's fact. So here are some ideas that he had. He is going to charge people for him to dance on his boat.
Starting strong, question mark?
Also, you have to really believe in yourself as a dancer.
Yeah.
That people with no frame of reference are going
How
to want
to
come see
to pay-
you on... It'd be one thing if, like, also he, like, by the way, apparently the reason he turned down his own idea was because he was like, well, then I'd have to get dancing lessons. So he, from the start, was not a good dancer.
So, like, the initial investment was too high because he didn't have the money yet to buy dancing lessons. Oh, my God. Like, this is, like,
he was starting at, like, at a net negative,
yeah,
I suppose.
Negative. Yeah, exactly.
So he was like, oh, wait, that I'm not a dancer, so that might not work. Because not. Who would want to stand there and just, like, clap along while I dance on my boat? And
I
also,
mean,
are they even welcome on my boat? Or, like, are they standing on the dock while I'm on my
that's
boat?
That's what I'm wondering.
So he's like, okay, well, we gotta nix that one. So, then the next thing is he's going to, the way it was phrased ekes me out. He's going to charge couples, I'm sorry, he said lovers, to stay on his boat.
Well, that,
so
yeah.
Now I'm wondering, is this...
Did you say it ekes you out?
Yeah.
Like, ick you out?
Sure.
But I like still... eek you out. That's interesting.
I think I have trauma from every time Eva's ever texted
us
eek.
I know, that's why I don't like that. But in my head, she's saying eck, because she spells it E-K.
Yeah. I don't... In my head, I just hear eek. And
oh,
then I
hear eck.
Oh, well, it certainly eeks me out.
Well, it icks me out. I say icks me out a lot lately. I don't know where I got it from. Clearly not you, because you say it real weird.
Okay. Maybe because eek sounds like freaks me out.
Oh, maybe that. Yeah.
I don't know. We could really tumble down that hill very quickly if we'd like to.
It's just just end in a trash heap at the bottom.
Yeah, except we're already in a trash heap above, so it just becomes one big trash pile.
Oh,
by the
we
end.
Accidentally went to the dump, and now we're just rolling around.
Well, it reminds me, in school there at CNU, we had Mount Trashmore, which was literally a park built on top of, like, a dump. And so when it would rain, the park would smell like sewage because the trash under. They literally didn't know what to do with the trash, so they just put a blanket of grass over it, and then they put some, like, recess equipment on it.
Oh, no.
And so you would just go to it was literally called Mount Trashmore, and you would just go to the park, but you knew you were dancing around on trash. And yeah, whenever it would rain, it would smell like garbage because it was coming through the grass.
Yuck.
Anyway, we start at Mount Trashmore, then we roll down the hill, and then we end up in more trash. That's
just
how I see
so
that.
Much trash.
Anyway, what a tangent.
You told
me,
you know, you told me we had time. What do you think is going to happen?
You're right. I also always, there was a huge rumor that, like, at Mount Trashmore, there were dead bodies under the grass.
Sure, of course.
Which, like, why? I mean, Law and Order told me that there's dead bodies in the dump all the time.
All the time. And you can smell it when it rains, so.
It's honestly, whenever Megan's at the park, you better look out, because she's gonna let you know real quick if it smells like a dead fucking body,
if it's raining or not. Yeah.
So what was he doing? Oh, so yeah, he said he was going to
icking out lovers.
He's going to charge lovers to sand his boat, which confused me because I was like, that could mean a lot of things. That could mean a lot of tame things and a lot of x-rated things. It could mean
they're
you're
all kind of icky.
Like, are you charging them to, like, have, like, a romantic one night,
like a picnic,
a sunset boat experience,
right?
Or are you having them, like, rent,
like,
your
a motel
boat
by hour
by hour? Or are you, all I heard for some reason when I thought, like, charging lovers to be on his boat, I really thought it was like he's paying, like, they have to pay to, like, go if they want to do it on a boat, like, that specific. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, like, that's what I mean, like, motel hour by hour.
Yeah,
like, you need a private place.
Yeah, exactly. And they have that now in Vegas with planes. You can rent a plane for an hour.
Oh.
Like,
is it off the ground or is it on the ground?
No, it, like, does, like, a loop for, like, 45 minutes or 90 minutes or whatever.
In the air.
And, like, it doesn't look like a normal plane. Like, there's, like, the LOL cockpit.
Whoa.
Which I don't know why they didn't call it that, but whatever. They called it, like,
sexy time.
Maybe it's, like, the Mile High Club or something. I think
about,
it's, like, another play on words.
What about a G-sex?
Actually, that works also. It's just the part where the pilot sits, who, like, knows what the hell's going on behind
him.
And then the rest of it is, like, literally just, like, a bed and pillows and roses and candles and, like, sexy music. Like, it's clearly meant for you to... Can you imagine if we went on there just to like hang out and like just like play on our Nintendo Switches the whole time.
Honestly, I think that would be a blast.
I think it'd be so fun.
I think it's terrible for the environment that you're just flying around for no reason, but okay.
We're talking hypothetical world where we're not actually going to do this, but it would be, think of the party you could throw think of the pillow fight, think of the slumber party, the 45 minute slumber party you could throw up there.
The 45 minute slumber party.
But yeah, it feels like, you know, it's existed before. So when I heard this, oh, we could charge lovers to use my boat, I kind of felt like it was in the same frame of that.
He's just going
to
like put some rose petals on the ground of his boat. Gross.
Yikes. He's going to park it right next to like low tide at the seashore and it stinks. Those are some of his ideas. And he was like, this is not going to work. So I've got to come up with a different plan. So as he's sitting at the pub trying to conjure up a little strategy here, a group of tourists, all these people coming into his town, a group of tourists come in and they make small talk with him, but they hear that he has an accent and they like lose their mind, which makes me think they're American.
Yeah, definitely.
And they say, oh my gosh, you're a local. Please tell us some like local lore. They happen to be like spooky kids. And they were like, oh, we love looking up like all the haunted places and all this. Like, please tell us some like spooky local lore.
Also, like, it's not an accent if you're in their hometown. Do you know what I mean? People are ridiculous.
I know. And so they said, tell us some spooky mystery from this area. And so the boatman, who never gets a name, by the way.
the boatman.
Maybe the strategist, as I like to call him, with all of his big marketing plans.
I like that you say it's strategist instead of strategist. But yeah, strategist.
I also say eek instead of X. So I don't know. Sorry, listen. This is my American accent. I don't know if you're familiar.
So sorry.
Okay, so quaint. So he's sitting there and he heard, oh, tell me a story. Tell me a lore. And I think it sounded like he couldn't come up with anything. And so he's like quickly scanning the room looking for inspiration to bullshit these people. So he's sitting there and he's like scanning the pub. And there is a portrait of a hedgehog.
Okay, sure.
And he goes to them and he's like, have you ever heard about the Tizzy Wizzy?
Oh, boy.
So from the beginning, we can pretty much guess the Tizzy Wizzy might not have existed.
It's in his own mind only.
He was like, this is my moment to really wow people. Here we
go. Take it and run.
Well, he sure did. So he tells them that he himself has had encounters with the Tizzy Wizzy. Mm. And I don't know if he said I'm the first or only, but he certainly... I don't think he made it sound like it was a very common thing to run into. He made the Tizzy Wizzy sound very shy. You're very lucky if you ever catch one. And then he convinces this group of tourists to accompany him to the lake the next day for a Tizzy.
Yeah, he just wants people on his boat. He's such a weirdo. He's just obsessed with getting people on his damn boat.
I see. I'm one of those people, too, where if you have a boat, I'm kind of obsessed with getting on it. So I would be down to work with him. You know what I mean? I guess. If someone says I have a boat, I'm like, okay, I guess I'm.
What kind of boat is that? Like, I'm picturing like.
I'm imagining. Yeah, I'm imagining like a Tom Sawyer Huckleberry Finn boat.
Yeah,
like
just, that's what I'm thinking. Like something.
Like just a bunch of boards nailed together.
I think that's what I was picturing when it was like, I invite lovers onto my boat. And I was like, cool, that's going to be a great time.
Maybe at
But it might
best,
be fancier than that.
It's like.
I don't know.
It's like a Lieutenant Dan Trimpin boat, maybe. Mm. I don't know.
Well, and we're in 1901 or something, or 1900.
1900, yeah.
I don't know the boat facts from that year, unfortunately. So,
well, you have officially given me something to hyperfixate on. I'll know everything about boats by the next time we record. Don't worry.
Oh, okay. There's a lot to know. So don't say you'll know everything because
I'll know everything about the style of a boat in 1900.
In that specific year, yeah. Great.
The more specific, the more intrigued I am because I'm like, oh, it's doable to learn.
Of course.
So anyway, he is one of those people who just wants people on his boat. He's like, look, I used to be really bad with my money, and this was a bad investment because nobody comes on my boat with me, so you need to come with me.
Sure.
Makes he doesn't sense. Actually say that, but instead he says, come with me on my boat, and we will go on a Tizzy Wizzy hunt, since I know all about Tizzy Wizzies and you don't.
That is super fun. It's way better than his like dancing and lovers idea.
Imagine in today's world, though, you meet someone who tells you all about like a cryptid in the area, and then just that random person's like, come with me on my boat to go look for them. Like, ding, 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 red flag, red flag.
You could tell me anything and then say, come get on my boat, and it'll be a red flag. Like, you could say, I don't even know if there would be anything normal to precede that with. Come get on my boat is just a red flag.
There is the stereotype that Republicans have boats. And so, for me, that's, now if I hear, I have a boat, I have to be like, who did you vote for in 2016 before I get on this boat with you?
I mean, my stepdad has a boat, my sister has a boat, but they're like the, they're like, fixer uppers, shall we say.
Yeah.
But they're fun.
That's very sweet.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd trust getting on a fixer upper unless I was with someone who'd done it a few times.
Well, that's the thing, is only when my stepdad is there will I get on the boat, because
Your stepdad can also fix anything.
Yeah, exactly. So like, even on the fly, if we're sinking real quick. We're not sinking. Their boats are not that bad. I'm making it sound really, really trashy. It's not that bad. But they like refurbished a boat and reupholstered it, and it's really nice. But
wow.
I don't know.
That's very nice.
That's just some anecdotal evidence against your Republican comment, I guess.
Well, thank you. But I do know, at least on the TikTok, the side of TikTok I'm on, it's very common to get a video of trying to appease the Republican so I can like spend the weekend on his boat.
Okay.
So it becomes a trope pretty quick. So I don't know who this man voted for in 2016. Probably no one, since he was probably dead.
And also he lived not in the United States, so I don't think, anyway.
Honestly, this man could have lived on in many ways. He sounds a little out there. For all we know, he moved to the States and lived to be 100 years old, 116 years old in boat.
Could be.
He takes them out on this little tizzy-wizzy hunt, and he has them lying on the ground with their ears to the ground, and he has them listening for a tizzy wizzy. He's like, just listen and let me know if you hear anything, because if you hear a little squeaking, that's how you know that the tizzy wizzy's nearby.
Oh boy.
And so they're all out by the lake, by his boat, listening to the tizzy wizzy on the ground, and all of a sudden, one of them says, "I think I hear something. I think I hear squeaking." And the boatman goes, "Quick, follow me." And they start running through the woods, sprinting through the woods.
Oh, my God.
He says after they're running for a while, he says he saw the tizzy wizzy run off in one direction towards Belle Isle. And a tourist says, "Wait, I was looking over there and I didn't see anything." And the boatman said, "Well, of course you didn't. They're amazing underwater swimmers. You wouldn't see without a trained eye like me."
Oh, boy. Are these people like for real? In like, they think this is real.
They kept going, yeah, so I guess. So.
They went on someone's boat.
I was gonna say they're also probably trapped on this man's boat. So, and then they did believe that when he was like, "Oh well, you didn't see it because you don't have a trained eye like me."
Sure.
And they're like, "Oh, okay." So then they believe him and pay the boatman extra to take him to take them on his boat to go over to Belle Isle to keep searching for him, to keep searching for the tizzy wizzy.
Okay.
And obviously they find nothing. And after this, the boatman realizes that this is a new way to cash in on all the tourists coming into town. Tell them to go look for the tizzy wizzy, say it went towards an island, get them to go on your boat, so you win in two ways, and charge them extra if they want to get on the boat to go over to Belle Isle. On a hunt for the tizzy wizzy. After all this, and he realizes that he can cash in on this, he starts taking people on tizzy wizzy hunts, and he eventually uses the money to buy treats to lure the tizzy wizzy out of hiding and hopes to get a picture. Okay. So at least that's what he told a friend of his who was a photographer. He's like, "I'm going to find the tizzy wizzy, and when I do, get a picture of him." Mm-hmm. So this is now 1906. And
oh my God. What a racket. It's been this 5 years.
5 years of him just, you know, moving and grooving. And
bullshitting.
Scheming and dreaming.
I guess so.
We could do this for a while. Mm. So the boatman 1906, he tells a photographer, I'm going to go get the Tizzy Wizzy once and for all, and I'm going to bring him back to take a picture so we can use the picture as promo for my tour.
Sure, of course.
He goes on his own Tizzy Wizzy hunt, or so he tells people. He puts out ginger biscuits for the Tizzy Wizzy. That was what he apparently knew this guy was going to love.
Of course.
And according to what he told other people, a Tizzy Wizzy came right out at the sniff of the ginger biscuits, and he was now face to face with a Tizzy Wizzy.
And our listeners, at this point don't know what it looks like. So we have, because I know from the description that Spooky gave us, but like they don't even know how big this thing is or anything yet. So this is going to be quite a shock to everyone's system.
They do not. And I have a picture ready to send you when it's time.
Fantastic.
So these ginger biscuits, they pull out the Tizzy Wizzy, and the boatman allegedly finally catches a Tizzy Wizzy for himself. And it sounds like it was a real struggle to get a hold of the Tizzy Wizzy. The Tizzy Wizzy apparently was squealing and squeaking the whole time. Aww. It was like they were really in fisticuffs with each other,
poor
I suppose.
Thing.
And the boatman then brings Tizzy Wizzy to the photographer. Apparently this photographer was at Lewis Herbert's photographic studio, which was opposite St. Martin's Church. So okay. a lot of detail
directions.
There. In case you want to be a part of history, you have to go all the way to St. Martin's Church and then look across the street.
Okay.
And at this photography studio is where he shows the Tizzy Wizzy to the photographer, and the Tizzy Wizzy is still panicked and a little shell-shocked from his fight.
From being grabbed? Yeah.
From being captured. And so the way to calm him down, obviously, was to give him more ginger biscuits and some warm milk.
Okay, well, that's nice.
It would maybe calm me down, too.
Yeah.
And when he's calmed down, the photographer finally grabs one picture of the Tizzy Wizzy.
Okay.
And then the Tizzy Wizzy takes off. And one source even said he flew out the window.
Oh, no.
So now he can fucking fly.
Wait.
And I have a picture for you.
I'm very excited. I've never seen it.
Oh, no? Okay, well, here.
Have I?
Geo's Trio.
When would I have seen it?
Well, you're certainly about to now. Sent. This is the picture the photographer took.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
So this little character flies out the window with a warm belly full of ginger biscuits and milk.
Okay.
And this is a description of him.
I guess everybody knew it was already a hedgehog, kind of,
of the conversation, yeah.
But also you said there was a portrait of a hedgehog and he got inspired.
Oh, okay, yeah. So description is, this is from one source, so I'm just going to copy the quote here. Body of a hedgehog, the wings of a dragonfly, the antenna of a bee, and a huge fluffy tail like a squirrel. And really, this is clearly a hedgehog with like a tail, wings, and antenna just like taped to it.
It looks like it's wearing a bumblebee costume to me.
Yes, it does look like it's wearing a bumblebee costume.
And a tail, a squirrel tail also.
Which means like the struggle must have been just like holding a hedgehog down to be able to tape this onto him.
Poor thing.
And this picture, by the way, we will have this on our Instagram, and it says at the bottom, it says the Tizzy Wizzy found only in Bonus Bay, Windermere. So,
really beautifully, painted sign. And I will say, I did not think this is how you spelled Tizzy Wizzy, but it's spelled
me either.
T-I-Z-Z-I-E dash W-H-I-Z-I-E. So I guess. Okay.
I thought Wizzy would have two Z's.
Something,
And I thought they'd both end in a Y.
Me too. But, you know.
Apparently not.
Clearly I need to take this tour because I need a lot. I have a lot to learn still.
You know a hot nothing about this.
That's right.
I'm just saying. You know a lot about the stroller squad now, but not a lot about the Tizzy Wizzy. So this picture ended up being used on postcards that the boatman would sell on his future tours. And the Tizzy Wizzy is still known for this exact same description because it's the only picture to ever exist of him. And he has a reputation for being very shy, a good swimmer, a fast runner. Maybe he can fly. And also, according to the boatman on his tours, you can only hear the sounds of his faint cries and squeaks when heard at water level. So keep your ear close to the water. Which means, like, does he live underwater? Is that what I'm hearing here? So the boatman did tours of like this for the rest of his life, and many say that they only went on the tours just to meet him because it sounded so bizarro.
Yeah.
And others in the town also began hosting Tizzy Wizzy hunts, and I guess some of them like would end with like it makes no sense. This seems like such like a dude mentality of like, oh, it's gonna be funny, man. But there was these Tizzy Wizzy hunts where I guess they would take you all the way down to like the end of the pier. Or like underneath the pier to like finish out your tour, and someone ends up getting like pushed in the lake at the end.
Oh,
like, can you imagine? Like,
it's not very nice.
In my mind, in the early 1900s, everyone was just dressed
so
like
many layers
to the nines all the time, especially if you're on vacation. It's like how you would go to the movie theater in the airplane and like your finest church clothes.
You're wearing, I mean, you're going on a boat ride, like you're not wearing like Crocs like I am today. You'd be wearing like something quite fancy, I imagine.
Yeah, so apparently someone always got pushed in, which makes me mad for them.
I feel like that place is probably haunted with just the vengeful ghost of those people who got pushed in.
See, just the anger of wet clothes. And so that was, I don't know if they still do Tizzy Wizzy hunts, but people in the area do still hope to find a Tizzy Wizzy, at least their tourist friends do, in Lake District. And maybe if you have some ginger biscuits or milk, you might find yourself a little Tizzy Wizzy.
I'm obsessed. I'm like fully just enamored with this thing, and I don't know what to do about it.
I love him.
I don't know what to do. I love him. I don't know.
Especially, I have a soft spot for hedgehogs, and so this one just looks like he's just ready for Halloween, which is, by the way, again, for that spooky, when they said that they were going to dress their hedgehog up as the Tizzy Wizzy for Halloween, it makes total sense now that I've seen the picture.
It makes sense, doesn't it? And it's such a great costume. Yeah, my brother's obsessed with hedgehogs also, so I feel like he even calls his group the Hog Pen. Oh my God, I can't.
That's very funny.
Yeah.
Does your brother know about the Tizzy Wizzy?
I don't think so. And so now I feel like I need to inform him immediately.
Zandy Schieffer is about to get one silly present. And it's this story. The surprise of his life.
Em, that was good.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me banter probably a little more than usual. Probably not any more than usual, but thank you for knowing in advance it was coming. Because I texted Christine yesterday and I was like, I'm not used to my stories being this short. I'm probably going to over-talk out of nerves. So
I mean, don't worry. We are already at 40 minutes, so we've gotten pretty far into the episode already.
Out here in the middle of these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. That's how it feels when you're struggling with your mental health. But you don't have to feel alone. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
And That's Why We Drink is sponsored by Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. With Squarespace, it's easy to create a beautiful website all on your terms. You won't want to miss Fluid Engine. This is a next-generation website design system from Squarespace with reimagined drag-and-drop technology for desktop or mobile. And I'll be honest, this is a game-changer. Back when I made the And That's Why We Drink website, I used Squarespace. This was obviously well before they were a sponsor, and we have used them ever since. And it's unbelievable how easy this tool is. If any of us, that's the coolest part, any of us on the team can log in and move some things around, update things. We don't need like a dedicated webmaster to figure it out for us because it's so accessible. I love Squarespace. I've made many websites with it before, and it's really easy to get started. You can get one of their Squarespace professional website templates to use. They have designs for every category and use case. Then you can customize your look, update content, add features to fit your unique needs. It's just a really, really cool service. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/drink to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
I just opened my phone and I have a text from Blaze saying, I know you're recording, but I took Leon to the museum. I'm like, wait, what?
Blaze is such an active father. That is so nice.
I'm like, all right. He's like, we wanted to walk in the AC. So they're just looking at dino fossils. I'm like, have fun.
We wanted to walk. Do you think babies can sense how miserable heat and humidity is?
Yeah, she was so sweaty out there today and I felt so bad. I had to put like little water on her to cool her down.
Wait, even she was sweaty?
Oh, very sweaty. Yeah, poor thing.
Oh, little baby.
I know. It was very hot out. So next time I will, I don't know what else to do. She doesn't drink water yet. So I'm like, I don't know.
At what point do babies drink water?
I think they can't. Like, she can, but like, she doesn't need to because she gets it from formula. So I think at a year old, maybe you're supposed to start feeding them water.
That's like, so wild. In my mind, like, we just drink water from the second we're born. It's weird. I'd never even thought about that.
Oh, I lied. Well, oh, yeah, you can feed them water at 6 months, but after 12 months, their main drink should be, like, water or something different.
Wild. I never thought about it.
I know. It's kind of weird.
Does she have a new favorite food other than broccoli, or is it still broccoli?
Oh, great question.
Is it great popsicles?
I think so. She's kind of over... broccoli and butternut squash, because I was like, oh, she loves it, and so I just kept making it, and I think she's over it. But she really likes Swiss cheese and bread.
Now that's my kind of person right there. She's on her way to making herself a good old deli sub right there.
It basically ends up just being whatever I'm eating. I'm like, here, this is not a choking hazard.
All right, try sure it.
And she's pretty I think she'll be a foodie like her father.
Nice. Maybe she'll also be a bourbon drinker like him.
Oh, Lord. Let's hope not. At least not anytime soon.
Well, not anytime soon, but it's in there, I think. It's in her heart. She'll find it.
For Father's Day, I got, I told you, I think, a bourbon bottle that had, like, Happy First Father's Day, love Leona. And he was like, okay, so my infant daughter got me some alcohol. And I was like, yeah, it's not the greatest.
I liked it.
But...
I liked it.
Okay, well... the fun stops here.
Yeah, well, I hope everyone was in a tizzy with the tizzy wizzy.
Yeah,
and
I certainly was.
Now it's over.
It's over now. And I will say, last week I at least had fun facts at the start about Girl Scouts and cookies. Don't got that for you today, but...
okay. Thanks for telling us.
This end of the story. So at least we're going to get this over with and tell the rest of the story. Not leave you hanging this time. So, previously on, and that's why we drink.
Bark!
So we are following the murders of Denise Milner, Michelle Guzet, and Lori Farmer, three Girl Scouts whose lives were taken on the first day of their Girl Scout summer camp in 1977.
Yeah.
If you're listening backwards, please listen to the episode beforehand first, because... I'm kind of diving into the second half here, so I don't really have too much detail here. So we've just discovered that 2 months before summer camp took place, there was a training weekend in April of 77 for the counselors. And on that trip, camp counselor Michelle Hoffman discovered that her tent had been ransacked.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that part?
I sure do.
Someone had eaten all the donuts and left a note beginning with the sentence, "We are on a mission to kill three girls in tent one."
Yeah, so they had like full warning before children even got there. And...
but, like, what do you do? You're 18 or 15 or, you know, it's
I don't know. Part of me wants to be like, why didn't you tell the police? But then I can also see an 18-year-old thinking it's a prank.
But what do you do if you tell the police? Like, they can't do anything. You know what I mean? Like,
maybe I've just watched too much Law and Order. I just feel like Olivia Benson would take it seriously. But then I think about, like...
but in every episode, someone gets killed. So it's like, nobody's gotten hurt yet.
Well, I really... because you were saying in the last episode, too, the, like... a lot of people were blaming them, but they're also kids. I can understand at 18 thinking that's a prank or like someone being silly and like that's not it, but they don't know that yet. So I don't know.
I mean, how would you think that that's you just think someone has like a shitty sense of humor and
yeah, exactly.
You know, and like kids are dumb. Like some kids would probably do something like this and try to scare the girl camp counselors or something. Like, who knows?
Especially, yeah, that's a good point. Especially in the woods when the whole point is like, not the whole point, but one of the big things you do is like around a campfire trying to scare each
stories.
Other.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And there was also this like effigy of a man hanging from a tree, just like very spooky shit. But camp staff dismissed it as pranks of bad taste. And, like, again, I know people are always like, tell the police, but sometimes I'm like, well, police can't do anything. If you're like, oh, we got this creepy note, it's like, well, what are we, they didn't do anything illegal. I mean, they ate your donuts, but, like, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
So I feel like there's just not much to do. And, like, I'm sure, I'm sure looking back, of course, it's like, oh shit, we got a warning. But I mean, who would have thought?
Well, this whole episode, from the beginning, I've been saying, oh, imagine the survivor's guilt.
Yeah, so exactly.
Just tack that on, you know?
Yeah, it's hard to imagine. So as interviews were going on after the murders, police began drawing up possible suspects. And originally at the top of the list was a man named Jack Schroff. So Schroff was a local farmer, and it was determined that the tape and nylon rope that was found on the girls and at the crime scene had come directly from his farm.
Oh.
However, Schroff was quickly crossed off the list as a suspect because he passed a voluntary lie detector test, and they basically figured out that the murderer stole the rope and tape from his farm. So,
gotcha.
Wrong place, wrong time for this guy.
Yeah, poor Jack Schroff.
yeah, not a good time to be owning that brand of duct tape, I guess.
Right.
So despite being dismissed as a suspect, it gets worse for Jack Schroff because the media hung on to his name and like put his face on the newspaper with the title Slayer.
Oh my God.
And like basically hung him out to dry. And
oh shit.
He got harassed. He was threatened. And so
like what today's version of doxed.
Yeah, basically. And like, yeah. Which is so rough because he was never even like really considered as part of the, you know, like he was suspected because of the connection with the duct tape, but like he wasn't. There was no other evidence.
Like, he was
connecting.
An early ruled out suspect.
Exactly.
Like, and he just got, like, stuck in, like,
got,
his
like,
name.
Put on blast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yikes.
It was really rough. But then the police announced a new prime suspect, 34-year-old Native American Cherokee man named Gene Leroy Hart. And his middle name spelled Leroy. I just want to put it out there. Most of the people I listened to in the documentary pronounced it Leroy. So I'm just going to go with that.
Okay.
So Gene was serving a 309-year sentence.
Oh my God, why?
For the burglary, kidnapping, and rape of two pregnant women in 1966.
Oh, so he is much more likely to have done it in my mind.
Yeah,
than
already,
Schroff,
right?
Yeah.
Already. He had gagged both women, duct taped them, and left them in the woods to die.
Oh my God.
But one of the women was able to break out of the duct tape and free both of them.
Oh, my God. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Talk about like a survivor story.
Yeah.
And so you're thinking, well, he's serving a 309-year sentence. How could he have done this? Well, he had escaped prison in 1973 and was at large during the murder of Denise, Lori, and Michelle.
Okay. Got
just
it.
Just already looking fishy.
Mm-hmm.
So some other strangely convenient facts about Gene Leroy Hart. He grew up a mile away from Camp Scott and was familiar with the area. One of the pregnant women he had kidnapped and raped said that he had used nylon rope and duct tape on her as well. Mm. And the same woman also remembered that he had made... this is bad.
What?
She also remembered that he had made these strange guttural sounds as he assaulted her, similar to what the camp counselors remembered hearing
on
the night of the murders.
Well, at least that's like... some evidence there, right? Like, at least that's like proof pointing to a direction.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, I know this word is kind of annoying, but like circumstantial, because it's like, well, you heard a noise that you thought was an animal. Yeah. I mean,
it's at least a lead.
It
I would consider
like
it a lead.
It's a very solid lead. I would agree. Yes. And the same woman said that she and the other pregnant victims wore prescription eyeglasses, and she remembered Gene trying them on. So,
oh, okay.
There was like that thing where he left the glasses at the scene. I don't think it was her glasses, but like he had taken glasses from another cabin and was like, mm-hmm. It was just super creepy.
Interesting.
So Gene was swiftly climbing the leaderboard as a key suspect. And on June 16th, three sniffer dogs called the Wonder Dogs showed up.
Well, yay. That's my favorite part of this entire story.
I know.
I finally found something
spot.
To not... cry about
yeah, exactly.
In this story.
They worked for 9 days before the Wonder Dogs led investigators to a cave approximately 3 miles from Camp Scott and, fun fact, 100 feet from Gene's family's home. So.
Oh, okay.
The cave suggested, like the state that it was in, suggested someone had been living in it. And inside, they discovered photographs that had been developed of two women. A roll of tape, which matched the duct tape at the crime scene. Pages from a Tulsa newspaper, which matched pages that had been stuffed inside a flashlight found near the bodies at the crime scene, cigarette butts, 4 burnt extinguished tobacco piles arranged in a half circle, women's underwear, and a pair of sunglasses in a vinyl case that had been stolen from a counselor at Camp Scott.
Yeah, I call that a ring ding ding right there.
Right?
That's a ring ding ding.
I think so. So they also investigated another nearby cave where they found writing on the wall that said 77-6-17, which is the date of the murders. And then it said, "The killer was here. Bye-bye, fools."
Whoa. Well, that's also ring ding ding.
Right? Icky, yeah. Icky. So the thing they kind of latched onto were the photographs of the women, because they figured, well, if we figure out who these photographs are of, then maybe we can find who was in this cave. So Lewis Lindsay, a prison employee and wedding photographer, came forward to police and he was like, "Those are my photos. I took them, but I was not in that cave."
Oh, my God.
And it turns
If he's innocent, what a scary thing to have to admit, knowing you're just implicating yourself.
So awkward. You're never gonna believe what happened, but those are my photos.
Girl, this is crazy, and you're not gonna believe me, but hear me out.
I wouldn't believe it either, but just trust me. Ugh. So guess what? He said, "Oh, well, I was working in the prison's photo lab and I had a prison inmate working with me named Jean Leroy Hart."
Oh, okay. Well, that'll do it.
So basically he took the photo, presumably, allegedly took the photos from the lab and like kept them.
Got it.
Like a creep. So now they're like, okay, we think we're onto this guy, Jean. We're gonna, we just need to catch him because he's still on the run. So according to the Mile Higher podcast, this now led to what would be Oklahoma's largest manhunt at the time, with the search costing $1.28 million in today's money.
$1.82 million?
2.8, but yeah, 1.28.
Whoa. Jeez.
So it was a huge search. Meanwhile, with news breaking that the perpetrator was a man at large living a low-key life amongst nature surrounding Camp Scott, 400 volunteer locals gathered together on June 24th to kind of just do like a 4-mile circumference around the camp to try and find him. And this is where things get dicey racially speaking, just because when people, you know, find out that they're searching for a Native American man, the local Native American population understandably gets a little defensive and are like, okay, so you're searching for this guy. So some of the volunteers who showed up for this search were quite drunk and armed. And so it's almost like, it sounds to me like a pitchfork, you know, like.
Yeah.
So I understand why the danger there was kind of. Yeah. Present, like a potential danger.
Sure.
And so some of the local Native American community turned up to monitor the event just to make sure things didn't get out of hand.
Okay.
It's just a recipe for trouble. No discoveries were made from this search. So on the morning of July 28th, security guards at Camp Scott's Great Hall thought they spotted what they later described as a silhouette in the woods, and they went over to investigate. When they couldn't find the person they thought they had seen, they returned to the Great Hall and they found a pair of shoes with Denise Milner's name on them sitting on the stairs in a bag.
Ew. Well, ew, in a bag. That just makes it extra creepy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like they had not been there before because the security was just there. So basically,
that makes it extra worse.
Out in the woods, they went to investigate, and when they came back, someone had placed a bag with Denise's shoes.
Got it.
On the stairs.
That's so sinister, and it is. Like it almost feels like, because if the cave said like the killer was here, bye bye. It almost sounds like I got away with it, but he's still lurking.
He's
and
like taunting them almost.
He's like watching his.
Yeah, crime scene or whatever you call it.
Watching what he did and come to fruition.
The aftermath of it. It's gross. Yeah. And the fact and that then, he kept and that.
And giving them more leads of like, oh, you thought you found me, but you only found this. Mm-hmm. Ugh.
It's like stringing them along and it's pretty sick. Yeah, so The Tulsa Tribune wrote an article the following day titled "Shoes Mysteriously Appear at Scout Death Scene." And like just the fact that they thought they saw somebody, like he lured them outside just to like put that there. It's so absurdly creepy. So now they knew that the killer, or at least someone linked to the murder because they had her shoes, was clearly keeping a close watch and taunting investigators. So to test this, the guards went into the nearby forest and tied thin strings between the trees. And the following day, the strings between the trees had been snapped and footprints were found. So clearly somebody was like lurking around, because this camp, for obvious reasons, had been like completely shut down.
Yeah.
So there should not have been somebody wandering around there. But so they did determine somebody was lurking. And despite it seeming that Jean, of all people, was so close proximity wise, it took 10 months of searching to capture him.
Oh, my God. Yeah, why? Do we know hiding. Why?
Yes. So on April 6, 1978, police received a tip that Hart was staying at the home of Sam Pigeon, who was an older Cherokee medicine man. And according to the Mile Higher podcast, quote, "Medicine men in Native American culture are traditionally non-judgmental and open to helping Native Americans that were true believers." That is what their explanation was. I could not anywhere find any other explanation except that Sam Pigeon was just giving him a place to stay and be safe from the elements. And so he was protecting him, essentially. And so the police went to Sam Pigeon's house and sure enough found him there. He was wearing women's glasses that were thought to be have been stolen from Camp Scott.
Yeah, because he was trying them on.
Creepy. Yeah. And he was found with items that had that were definitely determined to be from Camp Scott, including a blue mirror and a corncob pipe. Probably the only time I've ever heard of that phrase outside of Frosty the Snowman.
Sorry, that I've never heard anyone actually use one before.
Me neither, okay. But I guess maybe it's, I feel like that's something, I don't know. Sounds like something you'd do in Oklahoma.
It sounds like something that only Frosty the Snowman's ever done.
I just like that there's a corncob pipe at the Girl Scout camp. Like, who was using that?
Like, who was, I feel like that was like the tough one on the street. She was like, I don't know.
It's, I feel like that was like craft hour. They were like, now for Father's Day, we're all going to be making corncob pipes out of our leftover corn.
I have no idea why they're, I guess maybe like a camp counselor. In my mind, this is like, why am I gendering a corncob pipe? But I feel like it was like a dude that worked at the...
Yeah. I mean, I said Father's Day craft, so, yeah. You know, I don't know.
But it doesn't feel like something certainly like 13-year-old girls are using.
Yeah,
so.
It was very... It was a random thought that crossed my mind of like, who was originally using that? But who knows?
I don't know.
But he took it along with a blue mirror. And when they arrested him, his first words to police were, "You'll never pin it on me." Which is like, yikes.
Which, by the way, first of all, that is some of that good old-fashioned confidence of killers that we've seen a million times. But also, like, you just said, "You'll never pin it on me," without even being confronted.
Exactly.
So, like, how do you know what we're here for? You just outed yourself. Also, you have things literally from... Like, there's so much proof. There's so much. What do you mean? What do you mean?
It's so scary. I mean, I think he knew. I assume he knew why they were there, because he was on the run and they had been looking for him for months. So I don't think it was like, why are they here? But because also I assume if they arrested him, they said it was like for the murder of.
Uh-huh.
But to say you'll never pin it on me is not the way I think an innocent person would respond.
If I got arrested for that, you bet your bottom dollar, I'd be crying, going, "I didn't do it." Like, not, "You'll never pin it on me."
Yeah,
like,
it's just a very creepy way to respond to.
Very
to
cold.
Exactly. It's just a weird thing to say. So 2 years later, we're now at March 19th, 1979. The trial begins against Jean Leroy Hart. And, you know, it's hard to believe, but I think I got a lot of context from that docuseries I was talking about with Kristen Chenoweth, because Jean had a pretty vocal group of supporters who were defending him. And part of it, I guess, was that he was a local boy. He had played football. He was very, you know, pillar of the community.
Yeah.
People were like, oh, I mean, even in the interviews in the show, people were like, no, I know him. He wouldn't do this. And it's like just the ultimate example of, you know, people just not. But also, this guy was already in jail for raping two pregnant women. Did you think he was going to do that? You know what I mean? Like,
that's a good point. That's a very good point.
He was in prison for something heinous, so he can't be that good of a guy.
Maybe they just all thought he was getting pinned for the wrong things over and over again or something.
Maybe,
I don't know.
But I don't even know if he claimed to be innocent of the first crimes.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
I don't know. Like, maybe these friends aren't totally with it, I guess. I don't know.
So he had quite a group of supporters. And then in addition to the people who knew him from high school, there were also people, Cherokee people, who were, you know, defensive of the fact that basically white people were accusing him of this crime and people were not convinced that he had done it. So there was a lot of contention, you know, for obvious reasons. And so there was this fundraising event in aid of him so that he could afford his defense lawyer. And it said there were about 400 supporters in the courtroom.
What?
Yeah.
The fact that 400 people, I really want that to be like one person and his 399 children. Like,
yeah, it's hard to believe. It really is.
Wow. And also goes to show you how, I mean, we find so many pillars of the community doing this. Like, the power of charisma can really swindle somebody.
It's shocking. It really is. And like, I think the hardest part, because I obviously, like I said, got a lot of context from this docuseries about like the racial tension and why people were automatically, you know, obviously feeling defensive and like feeling infringed upon. And like, you know, they'd already been through so much at the hands of these, you know, of white people. So it's you're coming in here and now you're putting someone on trial. So there's that. But then also on the other side, on the flip side, you think about the families and the parents of these three girls who show up and there's 400 people supporting the person that you think murdered your child. And it's like, it must just be such a hard thing to sit through.
I don't even know who to feel the worst for at this point.
I know. It's just an awful.
I can't imagine them. I can't imagine. Well, I can't imagine being a mom, obviously, but the experience of seeing so many people going against you, like, when defending, you're just trying to find the person who killed your baby.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that kind of got lost in a lot of the shuffle, which was really sad. And one of the moms who was interviewed, I think it was Lori's mom, said, which I thought was really powerful, really interesting. She said, at the time she was a lot more naive, and she's like, looking back, I see now like why there was so much more. Like, at the time she was like, what the hell is wrong with you people? Like, this man murdered my child. And she said, like, looking back, she can see now more of like the inner workings of why this became such a heated debate almost. But yeah, it was just really hard on the families to go to court and have 400 people obviously sitting there being like, he didn't do it, and you're just trying to find some sort of answers.
Yeah.
And again, this guy already was serving a 300-year sentence for raping two pregnant women. So I'm like, what on earth? Like, he is clearly not the pillar of the community everybody thought he was.
Like, how did he not at least lose half of those 400 people in the first crime?
Yeah. So it's a toughie. And like, I don't even feel like I know enough to take any sort of, but it's just tough. It's very complex. And you know, it's, again, if you want more context, I would watch that docuseries. It's very interesting. But so, along with the items stolen from Camp Scott that were discovered at Pigeon's house and the cave, which were presented as evidence, multiple people testified against Gene, including expert witnesses, people associated with Camp Scott, and former colleagues and friends of Gene's. And the prosecution, which was headed by a guy named S.M. Buddy Fallis Jr., were more than confident they had enough evidence to convict him, even though the court had strangely barred the prosecution from referencing any similarities between this crime and the rape of the pregnant women.
Okay.
So basically, the whole incidence of, like, they couldn't even talk about the other crime. So they couldn't talk about Jean's attack on these pregnant women in this trial.
Got it.
I sort of get, but also it's like that to me is already such a powerful
argument. It's such powerful evidence of, like, look at what this person's capable
especially
of.
If you have people testifying, like, character witness, like, oh, mm-hmm. this guy's a great guy, and it's like, really, you know?
Well, especially if you have to keep, like, I understand, like, that was a separate trial, and so you have to keep, I understand, like, the legality of it, but, like, it's so important to this person's character, and, like, if you're going to completely different people outside of that situation to be like, this person's amazing,
exactly,
like, well, that's not the true, that's not a full picture.
It's not. And, you know, I don't even really understand the legality of it, because he was already convicted of that. It's not like it was, like, up
that's
for
true.
debate, you know. It's
that's
just
true
weird to me that
it wasn't even alleged.
Yeah, exactly. And so I thought that was weird. And so they couldn't say anything like, oh, well, he was already convicted for using nylon rope at this crime. They couldn't, like, say, oh, the glasses, oh, the rope, oh, the duct tape. So there was just a lot of that was lost.
Ugh, I'd be screaming if I were the lawyer.
So frustrated. So frustrating. And so the main pieces of evidence that the prosecution brought up linking Jean to the murder scene were a strand of hair and semen found at the crime scene. An Oklahoma State Bureau chemist testified that the hair on the tape used to tie up Denise was an exact match to Jean, or belonged to someone who had the same microscopic characteristics as him. And I want to take a moment here, which I think they also brought up on Mile Higher podcast, to say, like, hair evidence is, like, kind of largely debunked, I think, now. Like, it's kind of like blood spatter, where it's really not as specific and, like, as we kind of all thought it was based on, like, Law and Order episodes and CSI. And so I think if you have the follicle, like, maybe you can use that. But I think just looking at a strand of hair ended up being kind of more bunk science than actual factual evidence.
But assuming that this is truly the guy, it did work in our favor this time.
Yeah. And so for what it's worth, you know, they said, oh, this is an exact match to Jean. And again, I'm not an expert here, so if I'm wrong about this, please forgive me. This is just what I believe to be true in my research. But so in relation to the semen sample, this became a point of contention because Jean told the court he had had a vasectomy, and so there should not be, you know, sperm that could link to him. However, after some tests, it was revealed that Jean's vasectomy wasn't really successful.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah, yikes in, like, its own totally separate way. Like,
I was going to say, like, I think Jean himself has his own lawsuit he can be worried about.
I was like, he probably didn't expect that, but that was what was found out, because a lab technician testified that the semen sample was, in fact, Jean's. And so at this point, it's sort of like, how, like, this is obviously the guy, is what not of what everyone's thinking, what I'm thinking, and what I think people who weren't on his side were like, well, we got this in the bag, you know, like, we're set. But I guess they didn't have as strong a case as they thought they did. I'll just put it that way.
Sure.
So Jean's lawyers had been hired from the city's Native American Center, and they were very, very successful in dissolving the prosecution's arguments. So in relation to the semen, prosecution questioned the results, arguing that what the investigators were able to determine was only that the semen sample was a match for a non-white male with type O blood. And so that's what they told the jury, like, that's all that they're able to prove. That being said, if you really do the math on that, it only corresponded with 0.002% of the population. Like, that part wasn't, you know, necessarily made clear, but it was very good lawyering of, like, oh, well, it could be someone else, and, you know, just leave out the percentage part.
Right.
And so that, I can understand why that would give enough doubt to the jury to be like, well, if it's just a non-white male with this type of blood, I can see why there would be doubt there. In relation to the bloody footprint that was found in tent number 8, it apparently didn't match Jean's foot size, and the fingerprint on the flashlight didn't match him either. But what they didn't clarify was that the fingerprint didn't match anyone because it was only like partial, like a really small bit of it. And so they said, oh, well, the fingerprint doesn't match him. But they
Well, there isn't a whole fingerprint.
Yeah, but they didn't clarify it doesn't match anyone because we can't match it to anyone. So it's like a lot. Again, it's good lawyering.
Good lawyering. Yeah.
It's like kind of telling it, spinning it in a certain way. And the defense also had a great roll call of witnesses, one of which was a local waitress named Dean Boyd. And Dean took the stand and told the court that she had seen a man named William Stevens in the cafe on Monday morning. And William Stevens was a convicted rapist. And so basically now they're like pointing to someone else as part of their defense. And so she testified that he was looking really nervous and she saw him lurking around the cafe. And then an 11-year-old scout, Girl Scout, also took the stand and told the court that she had also seen William Stevens around the campsite before the murders.
Wow.
A friend of William Stevens named Wayne Peters confessed to loaning Stevens a red flashlight and said that on June 13th, he had come home. He had come to Peters' home with bloodied boots and scratches on his body. So now they're building a whole case against this other guy.
Wow. So he really, this guy really was like shockingly not wrong when he said, you won't be able to pin it on
me. Yes. Yes.
That's sick. That's
really
gross.
Like the cockiness was like warranted, I guess.
I really wanted him to have to eat his words.
I know. It's very frustrating. So to top this all off, the friend Peters told the court that one night when the two were drunk, Stevens confessed to the murders. And I mean, I'm thinking, isn't that hearsay? Like, oh, he said he did it, whatever. So though Stevens predictably denied having anything to do with it, they collected samples from the scene. They didn't match him anyway. So I don't think they were ever going to really build a case on him. But it was more just to throw doubt about Gene into the case. So the trial lasted until May 30th, 1979, and the jury only deliberated for 5 minutes.
Wow.
And
it was not, good up for us, was it?
No, they found Gene not guilty of the rape and murder of Denise, Lori, and Michelle. And for them, there was enough reasonable doubt. I think the prosecution really felt like they had it in the bag and were feeling a little too confident and didn't think through like all the ways that this could have been spun. And according to Denise's mother, Betty Milner, she remembers that after he was acquitted, people started cheering and rejoicing, and it just must feel so awful to be sitting there.
Yeah, I just can't imagine.
No. And so he did technically win this case, but he obviously had to return to prison for his 300-year sentence anyway.
Right. Hope you enjoyed your vacation out here.
Yeah. Must be nice.
And honestly, like, it's still not really, I mean, I guess there is still some victory in the fact that, like, oh, he would be accused and proven in front of everyone to be guilty. But it still wouldn't feel good to know that, like, well, he was already going to live out his life in jail anyway. I feel like he wasn't given up. Proper, I don't know what the proper punishment would be, but it's like someone beat us to that with a different punishment.
I know, like, so he was already in prison, and it's just so it's very frustrating. And I mean, I wish at least they could have gotten some justice, which again, that's something like I think we probably can't even understand because we're not in that position, thank God. But yeah, I imagine it would at least be really a sense of closure, or at least from what I've read and heard people say that, like, when nobody is convicted, there's just this like question mark almost, even if you feel like you know who did it.
Yeah.
So this 300-year sentence was cut short when 2 months after the verdict, Gene Leroy Hart died of a heart attack in the prison's like exercise yard, basically.
Wow. I feel like all of this was very unfair.
He was 35 only. I know.
Wow. I don't know how to feel about that.
Me neither.
I don't like it. I don't like it at all. But I just like, damn, like, didn't even have. I guess you're dead. That's a pretty bad punishment. But also, like, you don't even have to suffer for as long as my brain tells me rightfully should have.
Yeah. And there was a little bit of controversy surrounding that because some people thought he was poisoned, or that like somebody had killed him. But then they did an autopsy and they determined that he died of a heart attack. And when they spoke to his mother, actually, she explained that his brother had died of a heart attack in his 40s. So they just had clearly like a, you know, bad genetic heart situation going on. And so this is probably not going to be surprising, but it's still just kind of like, I don't know, affronting. His funeral was attended by 1,300 people.
I'm sorry, did you say 1,300?
Yeah.
1,300 people went to his funeral, and I assumed they were all like...
To
friends.
Mourn him, yeah.
I really want it to be 1,300 people saying, that's right, fuck you.
Yeah. No, no.
Wow. Wow. Also, how do you know 1,300 people that are willing to travel to a funeral?
Well, I know that's such a... All the locals. I think it was just people in the Cherokee tribe who were like just, or, you know, or his friends from high school or people who were supporting him, not necessarily knowing him even, just like supporting him on the basis of like, we think he's getting unfairly accused or, you know, what have you. Because it was like a big media sensation. And I think part of the kind of icky part too is if you watch some of the press conferences, you can see them asking him questions in press conferences, like, and he's looking all smiley and they're like, oh, well, what do you think about Watergate? And it's like,
oh, what?
This guy is accused of raping and murdering children. And you're like, hey, bud, what do you think of Watergate? What are your takes? What's your hot take on politics? And it's like, just
a little schmoozy.
It does. It's so weird to me. And like, talk about eking me out. I felt like, felt really weird about it. And like, even if, because this was even before he was acquitted. So it was like, he's on trial for this, whether he did it or not. It's like, just so weird to me that he was able to get such a kind of rally going for him.
That's so weird.
It is. It's very weird. Especially of all crimes, you know, you'd think like, this is
he's
not
got,
the one.
He's got a handful.
He's got a really bad, really bad, like, indefensible crimes that, like, he's being accused of. So it's hard to wrap your head around, I guess. There's been a lot of further speculation, obviously, especially after he passed away so suddenly and there was not any closure, really. So here's some weird shit that, like, went down afterwards. So in 1989, a reverend named Gerald Manley, who attended the preliminary hearing and the trial as an observer, came forward to the media to reveal that he had been present during the murder.
What?
I know. It's it's
sorry.
Like, what?
Come
what
again?
Are you talking
what did
about?
You say?
Next, I'm going to hear like 1,300 people attended the murder, and I'm going to be like, what is going on with this story? And so he told them there were four perpetrators.
Okay.
And he said one of whom was called Leroy, which I assume he's talking about Leroy. And he would be able to identify two of them. Although maybe Leroy, I think he's talking about a different Leroy, I guess, because he says he was present and one of the guys was called Leroy and he would be able to identify two of the other perpetrators. So this is his story. According to Dallas News, he had gone in to tell the police his story six times in 3 years, but they were unconvinced of his involvement.
Oh,
so already weird situation. So a private investigator named Ted LaTurner spoke to Manley, who revealed the full story under hypnosis. Okay.
What is going on? Hang on.
As well as passed a polygraph test. So at the very least, I think this guy believes his story. Whether it's true or not, I think he seems to be convinced about it.
Okay.
And so Gerald is a Methodist pastor. He lived about 11 miles away from Locust Grove, and he told the private investigator, under hypnosis, I think, that on June 13th, 1977, the day of the murders, he had been driving and ran out of gas when two young men stopped to help him. He befriended the men who had been drinking, and they drove him to get gas. And in the car, he overheard them discussing how they had stolen a purse from Camp Scott and stolen wire and tape from the Schroff farm.
Oh, and shit.
Gerald, the reverend or the minister, decided they were, quote, in need of a Christian influence.
Girl, what?
Girl, what?
Oh, my God. Okay. So
and he was like, wow,
feels like a ding, ding, ding to me.
So he's like, these fellows are up to no good. And so either way, they get his gas, drop him back off at his car, and he goes off to meet a friend in Tulsa, but they all keep in touch.
Oh, thank God.
Old friends. But I guess Gerald meets up with them later that week, and they play dominoes together and have a great old time hanging out. And then on the night of the killings, he drove around the Locust Grove area in search of one of his acquaintances, parked his car, and went to sleep near Camp Scott. Sometime later, he was awakened by one of his domino partners who wanted Gerald to come with him to go down to where some of the guys are. After a brief drive and hike, he found himself in the Girl Scout camp being led by his acquaintance into a tent. Uh-huh. In the darkness, he said he could see at least four men in or around the tent, two of his domino partners and two men he didn't know.
Oh, shit.
He said once inside, with only light from a partially covered flashlight, he said he saw the body of a girl on the wooden floor, and he saw two sleeping bags containing bodies.
Whoa.
He said, I was scared to death. I didn't know whether they'd kill me or not. After he had been in the tent a short time, the men decided to leave, carrying the bodies with them. About 150 yards down a path leading to a service gate, the men became frightened, dropped the bodies, and ran in separate directions. And he said, with the first hint of sun coming up, he finally made his way back to his car and drove nearby to a town called Chouteau to have coffee.
Oh, this was a very... That was a lot of chaotic turns.
Like, what is going on here?
I don't know what to say.
And I'm realizing that I said, like, on the day of the murders, he befriended these guys and they stayed in touch, but that doesn't make sense because...
Right. Wait, clearly, hang on.
I think I must have written that down wrong. I assume he had met them when he ran out of gas that one day, and then they met up later on the day of the murders to play dominoes. I'm assuming is what happened based on this story, but... he explains that he had coffee and didn't tell anybody because he was afraid of the men, so he didn't call the police.
Okay, well.
It's just hard to believe that a minister who sees three dead bodies of little girls, like, just goes have a coffee and is like...
Like, unfazed.
I'll just keep completely... my mouth shut.
It's like, yeah, what? It's. I think I need a cold brew. Like, that's what. That's it.
Me too. He's just so bizarre. So, though the State Investigation Bureau director, Robert Hicks, said that they couldn't find any corroborating evidence to support Gerald's case, several people who knew the minister said it was uncharacteristic for him to lie or attempt to draw attention to himself. But I'm like, but yeah, but y'all also said that, that what's his name was, that Leroy, that Hart was like a fucking pillar of the community. So I don't know if exactly. I trust you on that, but it's just odd. So like, it's hard to know if this is something that really happened, if he just kind of developed the story subconsciously and like it came out during hypnosis, if he's like just disturbed. Like, I don't know what answer I want.
I can understand like not wanting to say anything because you're scared they'd find you since they like know where you play dominoes, I guess, but like I feel like I would just I don't know. I feel
well,
like,
and it did say that he went in six times to police after Gene's arrest and they just didn't believe him, so I'm like, it's not like he never told anybody, it's like they just dismissed him.
I mean, maybe he's telling the truth. I don't know. I really don't know, actually.
And I want to add too that like there was there were reports people at the camp saw multiple flashlights or multiple lights in
the
woods.
Then that would make sense, right?
Yeah, but it's hard. It's also hard for me to believe that four people, and then
I guess it would make sense for some things with like the footprint and the fingerprint not matching up or something like that. Or
yeah,
I don't know. But then you would have thought like, well, I was gonna say Leroy would have happily told people like, oh, there were three other people, but then like, no, he wouldn't have, because he would have been implicating himself that he was there to begin
right
with.
So
yeah, this is a thinker, man.
I still feel
like he did it, but I'd
no,
like
me too.
I wasn't there, but my what I would tell myself at the end of the story is, oh, it feels like he did it.
No, yeah, I mean, but it's just like, did he do it alone or did he do it with...
I think he did it alone.
Three other people. Yeah. I'm inclined to think that way too. And it's like, I just feel like it's so hard for, it would be so hard for four people to pull this off and not ever say anything or get in any sort of trouble or not say something while drunk sometime. And it's just weird to me that
if it did happen and there were four people who all got away with it, it's like, in a bad way, impressive.
Yeah. I mean, and I wonder if it just died with Gene when he had the heart attack and that was a lot, you know, I don't know. So anyway, the murders, of course, of Farmer Guzet and Milner remain unsolved, unfortunately, and everyone, especially their families, are still hoping for closure after all this time. And though there is plenty of evidence to suggest that Gene Leroy Hart is responsible, it's another common theory that this could have been multiple people. I think you and I were both kind of stuck on that. And the girls at camp specifically describing there being multiple flashlights is part of that evidence. And so firstly, we have to take into account Gerald's story, the pastor, even though it seems a little wacky, like, you know, maybe he's telling the truth and this really happened. Secondly, Sherry Farmer, Lori's mom, has commented saying, "I have always felt in my gut there was a girl present."
Oh, what? Interesting.
And she said, "And given the DNA results, you have to wonder if there wasn't also a female who took part in the murders." And in that quote, she's referencing how in 2008, the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation retested samples from the crime scene and found that one of the girls' pillowcases contained a DNA sample that didn't match any of the girls. But at the same time, like at a Girl Scout camp, it wouldn't surprise me.
Everyone's touching everything.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if like another girl's hair got on their pillow or something. So I don't think that's like a slam dunk. And then in 2011, John Russell, a man convicted of embezzlement and check fraud who served his time in Ottawa County Jail, said that another inmate named Carl Lee Myers, who was guilty of the 1996 murder of Cindy Marzano, also confessed to being the Girl Scout murderer.
And
Jeez,
okay.
Just casually. And before Myers died in prison in 2012, authorities were able to link him to the rape and murder of Sean Williams, but not the Girl Scout murders. And John Russell, the guy in prison for the embezzlement and check fraud, said he wanted to make a film about the Girl Scout murder case called Candles.
Rose.
But that hasn't come to fruition yet, so I don't really know what that's about. So we've pretty much reached almost the end of the story. And so I guess let's just bring it back to Lori, Denise, and Michelle's families. Ever since Denise's murder, Betty Milner spoke to Tulsa World and explained, this makes me very sad, that she was too overwhelmed with her daughter's death that she has been unable to visit her grave after all this time.
I don't blame her.
It's so tragic.
I think everyone grieves different.
Yeah, absolutely. Michelle Guzet's father, Richard, went on to found the Victims' Bill of Rights in Oklahoma. Born out of Richard and his wife feeling like law enforcement ignored them, according to Ranker, he established this bill to keep victims and families involved in every step of the legal process. The Compensation Board helps provide victims and their family members with money to assist with expenses like medical bills. So that's pretty awesome. Lori Farmer's mother, Sherry, went on to create something called the Oklahoma Strand of Parents of Murdered Children Organization, which provides families with care. And according to News on 6, quote, "Losing her daughter, Lori Farmer, in 1977 changed her life forever. And she has spoken up since that day to make sure Lori's life will always matter." And so as for Camp Scott, it was immediately shut down and remains abandoned to this very day. And there are photos and people go there just to like kind of lurk around and like it's very spooky, as you can imagine. It's just like an abandoned Girl Scout camp where three people were murdered. It's very
I can
spooky.
Only imagine the people who've gone there just to like do a Ouija board or
something. Yeah, don't do that, folks. Yeah. And so anyway, there's a lot of sources, a bunch of sources. A lot of people have talked about this and covered this. One of the websites that was most useful is called GirlScoutMurders.com, where they really go through everything, as well as the YouTube documentary, Someone Cry for the Children, the Oklahoma Girl Scout Murders. And then, of course, the docuseries I was watching on Hulu called Keeper of the Ashes, which is sort of partially hosted by Kristen Chenoweth, who's from that area. And that came out in May. So that was like a very recent.
So wild. Coverage. Like great timing for you to cover it now.
Because I put it off for so long.
Yeah. Well, yikes. Well,
and it's just like so rough because there's no closure and like you really wanted to get that justice and it just never happened. And yeah, it's just sad. So, I mean, hopefully you never know. Like, you know, 50 years ago, nobody knew we'd be able to analyze DNA someday. So maybe there's some way we'll be able to close the case. But
yeah, I definitely think one day there's going to be some practice we do now where they're going to be like, that was not good, but right? We've got something so much better.
Yeah. Like when, I mean, yeah, who knows what someday they'll be like face palming about, you know,
like how we now, like how people would like clean up like crime scenes or like move everything around or not touch things. Or now I'm just like, what in the world were you doing?
What I feel like thinking
people are totally going to do that one day. They're going to watch Law and Order and go, every episode's wrong.
We're going to like take photos of a scene. They're going to be like, a photo? You're not taking a holographic diagram, blah, blah, blah. Rewinder to see who did it.
I've always assumed at some point there's going to be a time rewinder.
I think about that a lot, Em.
I think about it weirdly a lot because I feel like then they're going to, I think it's going to, when time travel is invented, if it hasn't already been invented, but if it's been invented in the future, that technically means it's been invented in the past.
You just gave me chills.
I'm just saying, if you can go to the past from the future, can time travel in the past.
Fucking good point.
It is weird that in the future that we don't know about yet, maybe they are solving crimes already and they're just being sneaky about it and we don't even know.
That is a very interesting point. Oh my gosh, talk about headaches. I'm like overwhelmed by the thought. I used to have that thought whenever my brother and I would get into like a really bad argument.
I do too. I do it all the time. Anytime I do something I'm like not super proud of, like I don't know what it, like if I pick a wedgie, like something stupid, I'm like, someone can see.
Oh, I'm talking about like if we'd get into an argument, I'd be like, I want to rewind time to prove to him that I was right. Like I'll be like, no, I said this, and he'll be like, no, you said this. No, I said this. And there's just like no way of winning. And I'm like, I wish we could just like rewind for a few seconds.
I would love to play that game with Allison because there's a lot of things she says that she does not remember. And I'm like, girl, we've done
this. You said that. Yeah, exactly. So that's when I think about it. But who knows?
No, I see. I'm always paranoid. I'm like, what if like time travel already exists? And I imagine people who are a part of like the time travel patrol or whatever it is, they also like get like invisibility cloaks or something.
Yeah, there must be some way of covering your tracks if it does exist. Because
if it didn't exist by the time travel exists, you can just go further into the future and grab that technology and then you've got it. Like once you've got time travel, anything's possible.
Whoa.
But I always think that like someone is, this is like the definition of fucking paranoia, but I always feel like anytime I do something like pick a wedgie and I'm by myself, I'm like, someone, it has time traveled to this period and is in an invisibility cloak and is staring at me from the corner of the room and just watched me totally embarrass myself. Like,
Well, that would be weirder for them.
Sometimes I feel like it's like my ancestors being like, I wonder what grandpapa was like. And it's just me picking what she's
all
the time.
That's the thing, too, that I think of is like, I just always assume a ghost is watching me like pick my nose or whatever. I'm like, there's definitely a ghost watching me do this.
I guess that's true. And I like to think, oh, well, ghosts are at least, we can guarantee those are from the past, not the future.
That's true.
But I don't know. Do ghosts see time the same way? Because they might just be interdimensional and can go wherever they want. What if a ghost that is haunting you right now is actually a future relative of yours that died and they're just fucking around?
Honestly, I'm just saying, it could get crazy. Possible.
That's why when people are, when you're on a Ouija board and you don't know the name, maybe it's your future great-great-great-great-grandchilds who died and then is traveling through time just to check in on everyone.
Has nothing better to do than play Ouija board with you?
I would. If I were a ghost and had the ability to time travel now, absolutely I'd be going back to see my old parents' parents.
I don't think I want to know what they were doing. I think I would just be disappointed in them.
Well, there's certain people I definitely feel that way about, but there's other people where, like, I gotta know. I want to know, like, what some people were, like, up to as little kids. I think that'd be so fun. What if they can't? Okay, well, never mind. Okay, it's my own brain is breaking.
They were probably just picking their wedgies, just like you.
I know it. I know it.
Well, we got to do a little aftermath, but I have to pee first, so let's wrap this baby up.
And
that's
why
we
pee.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.